Hey, everybody. It's the Charlie Kirk Show. My speech at University of Kansas, Rock Chalk Jayhawk. We take questions from the audience. In fact, it's primarily questions from the audience. I think you'll really enjoy it, including some rather lively disagreements. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you guys for your wonderful support of the program, to support the great work we're doing as we crisscross the country and try our best to get Nebraska to fix their system. When you guys become a member at members.charliekirk.com, it helps us significantly. You guys get the Charlie Kirk Show exclusive. You can ask us questions directly every Friday. That is members.charliekirk.com, members.charliekirk.com. As always, you can email me, freedom@charliekirk.com, and subscribe to our podcast. Open up your podcast application and type in Charlie Kirk Show. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com.
Wow, this is great. This is quite a room here. This is something else. Great to be here. Hope you guys had a wonderful Trans Day of Visibility on Sunday. It's been quite a week, so lots to cover here. I'm actually going to Nebraska next week. I don't know if anyone came from Nebraska for this event, but we got some unfinished business in Nebraska. For those of you that watch the show, we got a lot going on that we have to do there. So this is my first time, I think, doing a campus speaking event in Kansas. I really got in a lot of trouble last time. I thought I was going to Kansas a year and a half ago because I was going to Kansas City. And then everyone got so mad at me, they said, no, you're going to Missouri, and so this whole thing. So good to be here at Kansas, and I hear great things about, I don't know, always great things, but mostly good things about this school, I should say. So it's nice to be here, and a warm welcome, and sorry for anyone that couldn't get in here. It's just the response has just been incredible. And so thank you to our wonderful Turning Point USA chapter that helped put this on. Give them a round of applause. They've done such a great job. So, I want to get to questions because that's the most fun and that's really why we're all here, right? And I want to dive into that. So, but it's not a huge mystery, but it deserves a question. And I think the question is far more important than what our lawmakers are talking about, which is, why are you guys, Generation Z, I'm millennial, not quite Generation Z, I'm right on the cusp, I'm right on the line. Why is this the most depressed, suicidal, anxious, and quite honestly, depressed generation in history? That's a serious question that needs to be talked about. It's a lot more important than having 145 days of our calendar dedicated to LGBT. Do you know that there's 145 days to our calendar dedicated to LGBTQ? Maybe we should ask the question and pause and say, okay, what is it exactly that is driving this generation to kill themselves more than any other generation that makes them so depressed and so anxious? Because, you know, the answer a couple years ago is, I'm depressed because Trump is president. And it's like, okay, well, maybe he will be again, hopefully, in November. But, you know, currently, so it's just, but I say, what, or I'm depressed because of the threat to democracy. It's like, okay, sure. Or climate change. It's like, no, there's something else going on here. And I don't think it's too big of a leap to say that many of you are growing up in the first generation of secular America. Now, regardless of your religious views, you have to acknowledge that if you do not believe in God, you won't believe in nothing, you'll believe in anything. That's a quote from G.K. Chesterton. And it's a generation that starts, well, many of you are raised in this society now where the most insane ideas are prevalent, where you're told to care about things that actually don't always concretely come into contact with your everyday life. And it's driven by abstractions more than reality. It's very simple. It's, are you able to get married, have children, and buy a home in this country? And increasingly, those three things are out of reach for many of you. And it creates this mass nihilism that, quite honestly, I wish our leaders would talk more about. And that transcends politics. I have my own personal opinion as to why this is happening, which is that when you start to remove the things that make you human and you start to act as if an entire generation can just seek pleasure with no cost, you're going to have some very, very big problems. We can see this manifested through hookup culture with the pornography addiction that is infecting our country. We see this with the drug overdose epidemic, where so many young people, so many students right now, especially at the universities that we're touring, are asking the question is, what is the point of life? What is the meaning behind all of this? And that is exactly what you get when you remove God from society. I'm not here to be overly preachy, but when you remove God, what are you going to replace it with? And that's a fundamental question, I think, that we need to wrestle with. And post-COVID, which, by the way, we never should have locked down our country. That was one of the worst mistakes in American history. We never should have locked down our country. And Anthony Fauci should go to prison for what he did to your generation. He should go to jail for what he did. Because I guarantee you, many of you lost friends during the pandemic, lost friends during the lockdowns. But there's two different things. People say, well, it's because of the pandemic that so much of this is happening. No, no. It's our reaction to the pandemic. Those are two different things. We did not have to lock down society. We did not have to mandate masks. And we certainly did not have to mandate a faulty, questionable gene-altering mRNA shot to a younger generation that was not at risk from dying for COVID. And it... what it did is it continued this line of thinking that you must be obsessed with death all the time, and yet you never actually want to live. And it's really a sad and tragic thing, because when I encounter so many people, they come and they say, Charlie, you know, how do I get happy again? How do I get joyful? I say, honestly, the most joyful thing you could do in your life is accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. It's the most important thing you can do. But even more than that, it's... you need to have ultimate purpose. You need to try to find a rootedness to why you are here. And if it's just like, hey, I want to earn as much money as possible, or I'm just going to kind of do whatever drug I want, that's not going to end well. And this does have political ramifications, because I believe one of the reasons why Gen Z, especially Gen Z men, are the most conservative men have been in the last 50 years. Let me say it again. Gen Z young men are the most conservative they've been in 50 years is because young men in particular, and hopefully young ladies will start to, you know, get on this line of thinking, hopefully. We'll see. And is that they want a country to grow up in. Is that they see the consequences of mass migration, of the political correct regime, of this trans nonsense that has been infecting our country. And they see the consequences of borrowing $1 trillion every 100 years. And quite honestly, we're not going to sit idly by and just allow it to happen. We're going to do everything with our agency and everything in our power to try to make sure that we have a country that is at least half as good as the one that our parents were able to enjoy in the 1970s and 1980s. Because right now we're inheriting a country that is not the same. In 4 years ago, if you wanted to buy a home in this country, it took an average income of $59,000 a year to buy a home. Now it requires $109,000 a year. It's probably less than that here in Kansas, but those are national averages. Now, unless you're, you know, going to earn six figures out of the gate, which you might, but that'll definitely put you, you know, in the outlier. Being able to own property is a core and fundamental American promise, and they want you to be a renter for the rest of your life, because if you are a renter, you are easier to control. Owning property, which is embedded in the American dream, makes you a threat to the DC regime. Being able to own acreage in this beautiful state of Kansas, or wherever you're from, and not just be a renter in anonymous urban society, allows you to have stake in the country. Ownership gives you stake in society. And it is becoming harder and harder for your generation to be able to do that. Why? Well, that's where all of a sudden... great. You could talk about, I think you said something about landlords. Great. And, you know, there's some truth. You can get really mad at landlords, or you can get really mad at the politicians that are borrowing trillions of dollars every single year and making your dollar worth less every single year. I mean, landlords, yeah, they kind of get a bad rap, but how are landlords supposed to make money when everything else goes up? You might say, oh, landlords are making too much money. They have to pay property taxes. They have to pay the note. They have to pay off the bank. I mean, somebody has to invest the capital to be able to own the apartment buildings. I mean, they're easy villains. They do overcharge at times, But honestly, D.C. politicians deserve a lot more blame than your local landlord for why your rent is going up and your inability to buy a home. And if you disagree, you can ask in question and answer. So, but also understand that this is intentional, and this is where I say the controversial part. This is not a mistake. There are very smart, corrupt people in D.C. in both political parties the last couple of decades, which I would say with one obvious exception, that is making the American promise out of grasp for many of you. We no longer have a U.S. southern border. We have 15,000 people a day. It's a little bit down now, but it was at its height, 15,000 people a day coming across the southern border every single day. We are, as I mentioned, we are deteriorating our currency and printing over, we are printing trillions of dollars every single year. $1 trillion we are borrowing every 100 days. And I believe this is fundamentally intentional. You might say, well, Charlie, who could be so sinister and so evil to do such a thing? Somebody who doesn't love the country. And you can come to your own motivations, but understand, stop trying to defend Washington, D.C. politicians that have never done right by you. They take advantage of you. They steal and plunder from your future because they've never actually cared about your well-being. And what is happening in this country, and I have no idea if it's going to manifest politically in November or beyond. But I've never seen crowds like this on college campus. I mean, this is a big room. We're fitting it. We're filling it. We had hundreds of people. We had to turn away. This is not normal stuff. I mean, I've been doing this for many years. You know, we used to be able to 500, 600, 700 people. There's something seismic that is happening because this younger generation, many of you, are saying, you know what? I want to be able to have a normal country again. I want to be able to say, you know what? God created male and female. There's not unlimited amounts of genders. It's a bunch of nonsense. I don't want to have to lose my job because the HR department suddenly comes up and says, sorry, you misgendered your coworker. We're now going to put you through an inquisition and we're going to fire you because you're the wrong skin color. I think it's reprehensible that we have hiring quotas based on race in this country. We should have hiring quotas based on merit in this country, not based on race. It's completely irrelevant. And you combine this together and It leads for a correction. And it's a correction that is somewhat political, but more than anything else, it is patriotic at its core. And you have two ways to analyze your existence here in America, and then we'll do questions, and I'll go for as long as we're able to, which is this. You can either be grateful that you live in America, or you can be ungrateful. It really is that simple. And there are a lot of problems, and you should be very angry at your politicians. However, being bitter about the United States of America as a country is a lot different than being dissatisfied with the current state of the government. Those are two completely different things. We want to restore the promise of this country. And the promise is super simple, that regardless of skin color or background, if you work hard and play by the rules, you save money, get married, have kids, don't break the law, you're going to have a better life year over year, absent some sort of crazy thing happening to you. That promise is being broken. The average American family has like $1,000 in their bank account or less for emergencies. Average credit card debt has now surpassed $1 trillion. Many of you probably have tens of thousands of dollars of student loan debt as things continually get more and more expensive. It does not have to be this way, and it can change, but it has to change from the bottom up, which is why you being here and this presence on this campus is so remarkable. And the core promise is really, or the demand is really simple, is that we want the country back that we had, I don't know, like 4 or 5 years ago, where we had a border where Easter was just Easter, not like weird trans day and also Easter, where we were able to have conversations without having to be worried about being fired about some sort of stupid diversity, equity, inclusion mandate that might come down from on top. These sort of things are fundamental to a society. And what happens if we don't correct them? I think you know what happens if we don't correct them. You can either check out and just go home and smoke weed and play video games and like check out of society and be cynical. But you being here tonight is you telling the regime that you're not going to be cynical, that you are going to make noise, that you are going to be disagreeable, that you're not going to take it any longer, and that you want a country that you grew up reading about, but you have not had a chance to live in yet. You want to build that place. And that is the American spirit. It's the American spirit that, quite honestly, the people that came to Kansas and settled here 150 years ago, it wasn't easy before we had shelter like we do and heating and electricity, widespread electricity and air conditioning. It took a settler-type spirit. And the original Nebraskan and Kansans and Oklahomans that came here, they had a grittiness to them where they said, you know, we want to build a new country basically out of nothing. And many of you here tonight are asking for a similar thing, which is we want to rebuild a country based on these fundamental promises, a core belief that our best days can be ahead and that we deserve better out of our politicians that have been taking advantage for us for far too long. For that, let's do some questions. Thank you for sitting through that, guys, and we'll go right from there. Okay, so let's start lining up for questions, and we'll do it for quite a while. I want to say one thing. So this is a majority conservative audience, as I can tell. So, and by the way, you can start lining up here if you guys have questions. We'll get to as many as you can. If you disagree, you can go to the front of the line. And so, however, if a liberal asks a question tonight, please don't interrupt, don't mock. Give respect to liberals here tonight that we as conservatives don't get from liberals every day. So show them the respect that we wish we would get. Does that sound good, everybody? Okay. With that, let's get to some question and answer. Yes, ma'am. What is the first question?
You have a lot of experience doing these things, and I just wanted to know, what was the most wholesome experience you've had with a lot of people who came up here and disagreed with you, and then it turned around into something that they did agree with you with?
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of, I've visited over 150 campuses in the last 11 years. I've been doing this for quite a time, long time. Yeah, I mean, we've had some experiences where I think some minds were changed and that people had to think differently about stuff. I think more than anything else, and we'll see if this happens tonight, I prefer clarity over agreement. I'm fine with disagreeing. I just want to know exactly where we disagree. What I don't appreciate is when people come up and either misrepresent my position or try to make broad generalities about conservatives or try to say things that aren't true. And so, but yeah, look, dialogue and speech is what makes life interesting. And, you know, credit to KU for having us and for being accommodating and for hosting it. We really appreciate that. And, you know, not every college campus is like that we go to. In fact, most university campuses that I visit are quite hostile and not very open to differing ideas. And finally, I would say that less of these events and more of the outdoor Change My Mind events, we've had some really beautiful exchanges where I get to share the gospel. And, in fact, there was a young man. Yeah, I think he was a man. I don't want to misgender him, but he was definitely a man. Long hair, and he was wearing some sort of Satanist thing. I don't know if you guys saw this video this last weekend. It was seen over 12 million times just on Instagram alone. And he came up and said, you know, are you a Christian? What, you know, so on and so forth. And yeah, I mean, we just had a chance to share the gospel and talk about how, you know, Jesus Christ is there as a free eternal gift for all of us if you want to accept it. And it was seen by 12 million people. So those exchanges in particular are usually the most wholesome and the best. So thank you.
I am the mass mushroom. Do you support the legal use of psychedelics for religious reasons? Or is religious freedom only reserved for Christianity?
Okay. No, I don't. I don't support the recreational use of psychedelics. So.
Not for religious purposes.
What religion is that?
There's numerous religions throughout time that have used mushrooms for.
Yeah, the Aztecs used to sacrifice children, so that wouldn't be a good argument. So,
they did not sacrifice; they made them gods.
Yeah, the Aztecs did sacrifice kids. Do you disagree with that statement?
But did they become? Did they have a better afterlife?
No.
But how do you know?
Well,
their religion says they did.
Right. So, paganism is wrong, and murdering children is not morally defensible, regardless of how you spin it. So. But yes, to answer your question, cruelty or indulgence in something that is widespread harm to society in the name of a fringe religion is not under the clause of the religious tradition of the American tradition of religious liberty. But yes, what can you name an example of a religion that people would know of that embraces the use of psychedelic mushrooms for religious experience?
Some Native American cultures use peyote.
Okay. Just like mutilating children in the name of the modern religion of transgenderism is wrong, I don't believe that we should legalize drugs that could be very, very harmful that were the street drugs of the 60s and 70s that have incredible implications to realign the human brain and potentially lead to overdose just in the name of a fringe religion. But nice costume. Next question.
Hey, Charlie, I wanted to ask you about insider trading within Congress. I know this is like a pretty big bipartisan issue, and I think we both can agree that Congress won't check themselves in terms of, you know, that sort of front. So I want to know, like, your opinion on, like, what you think are real solutions to that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that if you're a member of Congress, you should be able to actively trade stocks, period. You should put them into a blindly managed stock account. And I think we could agree with a lot of left-wing Democrats on this. I mean, Pelosi does deserve, I think, to go to jail for insider trading. I mean, this thing is completely out of control. I mean, I don't even know if you're even on the left, you should look at her portfolio performance. I mean, she beats the Dow Industrial Average by like 40%. I mean, she makes Warren Buffett look like, you know, an 18-year-old investor that's just randomly picking stocks. Oh, wow, Nancy Pelosi randomly put $100 million into electric vehicle stocks right before the $1 trillion infrastructure bill was passed that just so happens to subsidize electric vehicles for the next 10 years. Yeah, that's not stock picking. That is naked corruption in the name of taxpayer malfeasance, and she should go to federal prison for that. And so nobody should go into government to get rich. And I think that it's very simple. They passed the Stock Act like 12 years ago. It's really a mockery and it's a joke. We should make it far stricter where if you are an active member of Congress, you are not allowed to trade stocks. It has to be in a blindly managed trust account. You can't have any connection or any communication. And I wonder if their votes would actually change. Like, what if their votes would actually change if you might not be able to go make a 30% boost on your stock portfolio because you want to try to get electric vehicles because you think Tesla's going to go up because, you know, you want your husband's, you know, stock portfolio to do well. So that's my position. I think many of our politicians deserve to go to jail for the enrichment that they've enjoyed on behalf of the American worker.
The world is in flames and Bidenomics is a complete and total disaster. But it can't and won't ruin my day. Why? Because I start my day with a hot America First cup of Blackout Coffee. It's 100% America and 0% grift. Blackout Coffee is 100% committed to conservative values. From sourcing the beans to the roasting process, customer support, and shipping, they embody true American values and accept no compromise on taste or quality. Look, you got to check out right now blackoutcoffee.com/Charlie or use coupon code Charlie for 20% off your first order. That is blackoutcoffee.com/Charlie. Be awake, not woke. That's blackoutcoffee.com/Charlie. Check it out. Promo code Charlie.
Okay, let's go here.
Hello, Mr. Kirk. I'm Jasper. My question is, I think we share a lot of the same values, civil liberties, sound economic policy. I feel like the biggest infraction on our civil liberties, at least in my lifetime, happened under the Trump administration, which is why I can't support Donald Trump. I'm looking at Kennedy right now because, you know, I don't think he's going to trump our civil liberties. I think he has a pretty nuanced stance on economics. So why do you continue to support Trump? I feel like you know that you talk about Dr. Fauci, our civil liberties were trampled on under his watch.
So you mean just COVID, or do you mean, are there other things in particular?
COVID is the main thing, you know. It was his watch that you know, I was locked up in my house for, you know.
Well, hold on. So what state were you in?
I was here in Kansas.
So that was your governor's fault, not President Trump's fault?
Hold on. No,
or your mayor's fault? Did he mandate the state to close?
He put Dr. Fauci in charge.
Got to answer the question. I'll concede Fauci, but did he mandate anything to close?
Did he mandate anything? No, he didn't.
Okay, so then your gripe is with
at the same time,
the time of your Kansas leadership or your mayoral leadership.
Fair.
Secondly,
we do have control over.
Secondly, you said it's the worst that you've had in your lifetime. Donald Trump made the vaccine optional. Joe Biden had people discharged from the military for not taking the vaccine.
I'm not supporting Joe.
No, I know,
but
you said you got to be fair, and you got to say Biden was worse than Trump. You can't.
Both of them have infracted on our liberties.
Do you think they're even in the same ballpark?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Biden kept up.
Hold on, guys. Be respectful. That's okay.
Biden kept up the policies of Trump, you know, and just increased them more. But, like, started with him.
Outside of personnel selection, which
you gotta hold him somewhat accountable.
Outside of Fauci, what specific policy can you point to that Trump did other than Fauci that specifically went after your civil liberties? Policy.
I don't have a policy for
because
you
right he now. Didn't. Donald Trump was the greatest defender of civil liberties of our lifetime. That's why. And I will concede.
I don't know. I mean, I gotta look with my eyes.
No,
and
that's
my
all
surroundings.
Right.
Like I experienced what I experienced. Well, it was no, under I, his.
But make
his
sure
watch,
you're blaming
you
know? The right people because Donald Trump
you
did
can,
not.
You can pass the buck all the time, but like.
Well, we live in
know,
a federalist state. Hold on. If you lived in South Dakota, nothing would have locked down because Governor Noem never locked anything down. So he allowed states to be federalist laboratories of democracy.
So why not Kennedy?
Well, first of all, he's a pro-choice Massachusetts liberal. That is
it's
not
a,
in
that's
my
a state's right issue now. That's a state's right.
Well,
Roe v. Wade
first
was
of all,
appealed.
He said
Roe v. Wade was appealed
on
to
my
states.
Podcast, he said that he would put Supreme Court justices in the tradition of the most liberal, the Warren tradition of the 1960s. So we
that,
would get.
Is that your hang up? Is that your hang up?
Yes, the United States Supreme Court is a pretty major hang up, in addition to the fact
no, I mean,
that Donald
I mean,
Trump showed that he can secure the border. End the wars, revitalize the economy, and bring back the American spirit. RFK has been a radical environmentalist his entire life. He is pro-abortion, and he would appoint liberal Democrats.
He was a prosecutor. He cleaned up the Hudson River. Like, you can't, he, I mean, he.
Hold on. RFK famously said that we should imprison oil and gas executives for their crimes on climate change. RFK has been good on one issue, COVID and the vaccine. He's been terrible on every other issue. And the second issue, he has a liberal left-wing running mate by the name of Nicole Shanahan that is a feminazi from California that supports Gascon as the L.A. district attorney. And so why not RFK? I don't vote for liberals.
I appreciate you being here, Charlie.
I see you're coming in good faith, but I want you to think about this in the days to come. I understand you're scorned about COVID, but you have to be fair about one thing. Donald Trump's instincts were right, and he got swallowed temporarily by the Leviathan. You could say he should have just pushed back, but remember the weight, the heaviness, the pressure of the time. His instincts were that we can't let the cure be worse than the disease. He said that he was attacked. His instincts were ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine out of the gate. His instincts were trying to allow us to open early, and he left it to the states. Now you say, what about Fauci? What about Birx? Fair points. I'll concede those. But this is if you contrast what he was doing with COVID from the moment Joe Biden took over, vaccine mandates, continuation of lockdowns, federal mask mandates that happened way too long until a federal judge struck them down. And so I encourage you just to think about it. Look at the facts ahead of you. I know we share similar values. And one final thought. Yes.
Yeah. Do you support Kennedy on the ballot in that he should be
oh,
able
yeah,
to run?
Oh, yeah, because he's taking more from Biden than Trump right now.
Okay, so yes, yes.
So
yes, okay.
And for that purpose, yes. Thank you very much. Is that an Aaron Hernandez jersey?
Yeah.
That's.
But anyway,
you know what he was like accused of, right? Like,
yeah. I mean, yeah, he's okay. he's one of the best to ever do it, though.
Just but, like you know, murdering his best friend.
Hey, I'm all right. All I want to
I'm giving
ask,
you a hard time. I don't know if you
no,
believe
it's okay,
in
it's
that.
Okay. But seeing all the good things that Trump did for our country, like that's why he's my goat, and it's probably a lot of people in here's goat. Like everything from like the what he did to the economy, the border security, and just seeing all that crumble with Biden in office. On a scale of 1 to 10, how f***ed are we as a country with Biden for another 4 years?
Well, okay, let's not swear, but you know, a scale of 1 to 10, 11 if Biden wins again. So there you go. Thank you. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? How do you feel about people focusing on the conversation of racism whenever there are, like, there's over a million people trafficked today in America?
Yeah. So we have a huge issue of slavery in this country. It's happening on the southern border. We get lectured all the time, I think, at your point about racism, but they won't ever talk about the fact that the greatest slave trade that's occurring in modern American history is happening on the southern border, where people are being sold for money. And the cartels sell young women for either sex slavery or indentured servitude when they come across the border. Make no mistake, we are being invaded every single day. It is a threat to our sovereignty. It's a threat to the American way of life. And if you think that what America did with slavery was wrong, which you should, slavery was evil. By the way, we're here in Lawrence, Kansas, where the history of abolitionists goes very deep in this city, in this town, in this state. I encourage you to open your eyes and understand the slave trade is alive and well in this country, and it's happening on the southern border every single day. Thank you very much. Just a reminder, if you disagree, you guys can cut in line. Our team will shepherd you to the front. Yes, sir.
Hey, Charlie. Thanks for coming. Love having you here in Kansas. Very well spoken. My question was about the GOP and the future for really the Trump presidency and afterwards. It seems like the GOP and kind of the conservative movement, but more the GOP, they're so short-sighted. It seems like they're just focusing on just getting Trump in office. If he gets in, hopefully. If not, I mean, we can't guess. But it seems like they're just focusing on those 4 years, and there isn't a lot of foresight as to what happens into 2028, retaking the House, things like that. So what do you think the GOP needs to focus on? What do we as kind of the grassroots need to focus on to kind of ensure not only just the victory for 2024, but for the next coming election?
Yeah, I just want to – I love the question. First of all, you can't fault the short-sightedness, because if you have – gushing head wound, you solve that before the long, you know, if you have a gushing head wound and cancer, you're going to fix the gushing head wound and then you get to cancer, right? So both are important. One's going to kill you immediately. One will kill you in like 3 months, right? So the longer term problem is that we need to try to advocate for a conservative movement that is more focused about what's happening on our southern border than what's happening in Ukraine. We need to try to advocate for the interests of this generation, more specifically to fulfill the American promise, make it easier for all of you to get married, have kids, own property. Yep. Those three fundamental things. And then we need to be unafraid to play offense. This is one of the things I'm trying to do in Nebraska right now. Nebraska has this silly system where they appropriate their presidential electors based on congressional district, which is totally antiquated. And it basically just gives Joe Biden a free electoral vote. So I sent out a tweet yesterday about this. It's kind of gone super viral. And Nebraska might actually change it, and we might pick up an electoral vote. So we'll see. That sort of attitude, I hope, you know, gets fixed and gets changed. And I want a conservative movement that plays to win. I want a conservative movement that represents the working class of this country. And I want a conservative movement that listens to its voters and that isn't always invested in these foreign abstractions and these adventurous wars abroad, but cares about the collapsing country here domestically. And finally, I want a conservative movement that's clear that we defend the unborn. We want to see church attendance go up. We want to see bigger families, that we want a restoration of the U.S. Constitution, and that is unafraid to bring the fight to the left. This is something we do at Turning Point USA, not just collapse and surrender and sue for peace. And I want a conservative movement that hasn't decided that they've lost before the fight has even started. I feel as if there is this attitude of surrender and losing, and I want to bring us back to that, to an attitude where we're not cocky, but we believe every fight we can get into, we can win, and that we're not just always trying to collapse because the left calls us a bad name. And finally, I want a conservative movement that does not care if you're called transphobic or racist, whatever, I don't care, I'm going to keep on fighting, goodbye. That's the attitude that we need. Thank you.
Also, really quick on the thing with families, completely agree. I've been married for 6 years. I have a son who's almost a year and a half.
Praise God.
Completely changed my life. So, yeah, if you guys really want to make a difference in your life, get married. It'll change it for the better. Thank you, Charlie. Okay.
Hello, Mr. Kirk. So I'm a little spiritually lost right now. I guess, you know, on a personal note, I'm just wondering what type of people you think should go to college and if you think going to college is worth it. Because right now, you know, when I walk into this room for class, I just really don't see the point currently.
Yeah, so first of all, I love your heart, and thank you for expressing that. So what is the point to college is what you're asking? Is that also your question?
More so, do you think it's worth it to go to college, just to be as general as possible?
It depends. I mean, I did write a book called The College Scam, where I believe that for many of you are being scammed, and I'll prove it to you, right? How many of you have to take classes that you wish you wouldn't have to take, that you're going into debt, that are a waste of time? Every single hand goes up, but you're forced to take them, right? And then just so we understand, half of the students in this room, again, some, it depends, is the answer. Half of the students in this room will never use their degree when it comes to getting a job. That's what the data shows, meaning that you'll get a job, it does not require a college degree. So half of you are good, half of you, you're gonna have a lot of debt, 4 years, you're like, I don't know. Don't mindlessly go to college, go deliberately with the end in mind, and do a cost-benefit analysis. It depends on what you're studying, it depends on why you're going, it depends on if you can keep your value system. All of these things are important. Increasingly, though, people go to college to kind of just find themselves, and instead they lose themselves. Like, oh, I have to go to college because, I don't know, I just kind of have to go to college. Here's a fact. There are 11 million well-paying job openings in this country right now that do not require a college degree, and they require 90 days to 6 months of technical training, but you might have to work with your hands. There are 11 million muscular class jobs in this country that Gen Z could get. How many of you would work for Walmart? Many would be like, I don't know if I'd work for Walmart. Do you know that a manager of a Walmart supercenter earns $400,000 a year and it does not require a college degree? The eyes are popping. No student loan debt. No indoctrination. No DEI. And yes, it is tough work. There are a lot of jobs in this country that don't require going to college. So do your own cost-benefit analysis. I don't want to overly generalize, but I will say that if you're going and you're getting a degree in North African lesbian poetry, it's probably a waste of time.
Thank you. Do you have a follow-up?
No.
Okay, good question.
Thank you.
How's it going, Charlie? So if Biden drops out in 2024 because he's too old or stupid, who do you think the Democratic runny will be?
Yeah, I think they have a tough situation. I think they have a vice president that's even less likable than their current president. Kamala Harris. It might be Gavin Newsom. I don't know if Joe Biden's going to make it. You know, this is the Joe Rogan line, which I love. You guys have ever been, 40 miles away from a gas station, and your car's like, I got 30 miles to empty? And you're like, I don't know if I'm going to make it. Exactly. I'm going to full accelerate. I'm going to get as close as I can. That's what they're doing to good old Uncle Joe right now. They're going, and they're like, if I run out of gas, we don't know. They don't know where they're going either, right? There's no GPS. There's no map. There's nothing. So they'll probably give it to Kamala Harris because they can't be a racist, right? I would rather be us than them, man. I'll say that. If Joe Biden makes it to Election Day, that would be a remarkable accomplishment of modern science.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, Charlie. My husband and I, we came here from Lincoln, Nebraska. Hello, yes. And we are expecting our first baby girl in August. Thank you. Thank you. And I was wondering, outside of raising her up in a Christian home and also planning on homeschooling her, what is your best advice for expectant mothers and fathers?
So, again, I'm hardly a veteran at this. I'm 20 months into it. But I'll tell you the things that I wish I would have known or somebody would have told me. And it's not that new. Other people will tell you this, too. That's just good for reminding. Kids spell love, T-I-M-E. So the amount of time you spend with your kid, that is the best way to show them that you love them, right? Especially fathers, right? We have a father crisis in this country, and dads need to be around, and they need to drop other hobbies and extracurriculars, in my opinion, and spend more time with their children and more time with the precious gifts from the Lord. The second thing is more wonky, which is, whatever decision you make will be the right decision medically for your child, but never allow yourself to be blackmailed or bullied by a pediatrician or a doctor if you feel there is something that doesn't seem right. And I'll let you fill in the gap over whatever that is. There are situations where pediatricians will say, they'll emotionally blackmail a mother into doing something that they don't want to do because they'll say your kid is going to die if you don't get whatever XYZ. So, never make a consequential, potentially permanent life decision for your child from fear. That's the best way I can word that. Thank you.
Oh, I have one other thing. So I'm not in high school, not in college, but like, how do I work for you?
Well, the first thing you can do is you're from Nebraska. Uh-huh. So I need you to call like three state senators right now that are holding up this. I'm not kidding. I'll give them to you. And you just call as a Nebraska resident. You just tell them, please pass the winner take all act and the governor will sign it, which will then get President Trump an extra electoral vote this far out from the election. So our team will talk to you. And then finally, you can apply and we'll, you know, we'd love to have you be a good fit. We're hiring constantly, Turning Point Action, Turning Point USA. But here's the thing. Your most important job is the one you told me about, which is be a mom. Never lose sight of that. That's your most important job.
It's not a question if something is coming. It's when. The only shock, the what. While you still have some control, what are you going to do about it? Your first step is going to MyPatriotSupply.com. Your next step is stocking up on multiple one-week emergency food kits from My Patriot Supply. Priced under $50, it is now time to buy in bulk. My Patriot Supply is equipped to help you prepare. They've helped over 2 million families already. These one-week kits with Ready Hour foods provide over 2,000 calories every day, and they're sealed inside a rugged ammo can so they can last up to 25 years in storage. Just grab it and go in emergencies. Get these kits for under $50 this week, only at MyPatriotSupply.com. That is MyPatriotSupply.com, MyPatriotSupply.com.
Hey, good evening, Charlie. How are you? I don't know why I got moved from the very end of the line, like the last person or the second last to here.
To get
so
some disagreements in the spirit.
Okay,
I guess
I'm a disagreement guy, I just want to make sure at the onset that I let you know that probably like 90% of what you say I'd agree with. So I would align on conservative values.
Everyone that might have a difference of opinion is allowed a platform.
Fair enough. Sounds good. Well, thanks. We came, my wife and I. I've got two kids. It's a blessing indeed. Came an hour and a half, and I also appreciate the fact that you are outspoken about your Christian faith. I mean, you made very clear here that your Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, is who you live your life for. So I have a question along those lines. I've heard you say a few times, and I just caught this in a few videos, and I don't know, I don't date all your videos. So you'd mentioned this statement. You cannot be a true born-again Christian and vote Democrat. Do you still stand by that statement?
Yes.
Okay. Are you familiar with the notable conservative evangelical Christian John Piper?
Oh, yeah.
Are you familiar? Are you familiar with his article he came out with November 2020, right before the election, on policies, persons, and paths to run?
Effectively, can't vote for Trump, can't vote for Biden. It was like a middle ground, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, in a sense.
His deal's Irresistible Grace. That's his blog or something, right?
Desiring God is his well-known blog and channel. Yeah, you're good. No problem.
No, he's a very well-respected theologian. Yes.
Yeah, for sure. So I was just going to maybe mention a quick little blurb of what he said and then maybe ask how you would kind of respond to that, if that's okay. And so in the article, he said, so we think that policies that endorse baby killing, sex switching, and freedom limiting and socialistic overreach are viewed as deadly, and they are. Indeed, I completely agree, 100%, all those things are completely evil. He said, however, I remain baffled that so many Christians, of which, of course, many in this room are, consider the sins of unrepentant sexual immorality, of course we're talking about a specific someone here, unrepentant boastfulness, unrepentant vulgarity, unrepentant factiousness, and the like, to not only be toxic to our nation. And so he ends by saying this, in fact, I think it is a drastic mistake to think that the deadly influences of a leader come not only through his policies, but also through his, and not only, excuse me, the deadly influences of a leader come only through his policies and not also through his person.
Yes.
And so all of us are going to be faced with a decision here in 7 months or so when we go to the polls in November. And so my question for you is, you know, as I'm talking specifically for those who claim to be born again, sincere, authentic Christians, and I'm asking you, how can you illegitimize the faith of a sincere, Bible-believing, prayerful, submitted to the Word of God Christian who simply determines that a man who engages in blatant and unrepentant sin should not lead our country?
So
how can you illegitimize that?
Did John Piper say he was voting for Joe Biden, though?
He said that this article is the closest thing that you can get to determine what I'm voting. He didn't say specifically who he was going to
vote for.
Okay, so
that's different. So my statement was the following. You cannot say you believe in biblical principles and vote for the principles of the Democrat Party. They're incongruent. They do not fit. And that's not what I'll address John Piper.
I agree with you.
No, I know you agree. So I'm going to address the John Piper thing because I disagree with what he said. But my position is this. If you're a born-again Christian, by the fruit you will know them. And if the fruit is that I will cast my ballot for a party that had Gretchen Whitmer and Gavin Newsom and Eric Adams and Joe Biden spend more wording and video time on Easter Sunday talking about trans rights than the resurrection of our Lord and Savior, that supports the massacring of children via trans and also abortion, that you cannot be a Christian and vote for that. Now, John Piper did not say he was voting Democrat. Yes. So he doesn't even fall into what I'm talking about. So let's talk about John Piper. What John Piper is saying is that I believe abortion is wrong. Okay. I believe that the transing of kids is wrong. I believe all this sort of stuff. But I think Donald Trump is this unrepentant sinner. And I would say, John, Mr. Piper, what do you have to do with the story of Samson? Should he be in the Hall of Faith in Hebrews? According to our own scriptures, it says that Samson is in the righteous hall of faith. If you know the story about Samson, he's sort of similar to Trump, the hair. God came to Samson while he was in the bed with a prostitute. Samson took the jaw of a donkey and killed 400 Philistines. He wasn't exactly your perfect mold, but God used him for a purpose. And I would ask John Piper, can God use broken, sinful vessels for his purpose? He used King Cyrus to bring God's chosen people after the first exile for the reconstruction of the second temple. And the question for John Piper, he says, I remain baffled. Well, you shouldn't remain baffled, Mr. Piper, because the people that are Trump supporters that are Christians, they know Donald Trump's faults. They could recite them back to you, just like they know their own faults. But he also has virtues. And I never hear the virtues ever articulated from people like John Piper. What are the virtues? He's awfully courageous. Would you keep on fighting if you're facing 700 years in federal prison time and your family's business empire is at risk of being taken from you? Would you keep on running for office and keep on fighting if everything you've done is in front of you? I don't know if I would. Secondly, his love of country, I think, is unparalleled, unprecedented. Finally, he was conflating a policy agenda with personality. He says a president is not only personality or policy, but it's also personality. But policy is far more important than personality. I'll prove it to you. If you turn off your TV and you tune out of all the media, will you still be impacted by the president? Yes, by his policy. And so the question for John Piper is, you're watching way too much mainstream media. You're being infected way too much about a man that I don't think you even know. But can you acknowledge that Donald Trump delivered 3 Supreme Court justices and gave us the overturn of Roe versus Wade? If we voted the way that John Piper wanted us, or let's just say embrace that belief system in 2016, we would have had Hillary Clinton as president, and we never would have repealed Roe versus Wade. The embassy would not have been moved to Jerusalem. We wouldn't have had peace in the Middle East. I could go on. I think we proved that the first Trump presidency, flawed man, excellent policy, fulfilling his promises. I don't think any Trump supporter, you know, is necessarily in disagreement with what I would have said. I'm baffled by John Piper, an alleged humble, fervent, dedicated Bible teacher that can be indifferent to 1 million abortions a year, 100,000 kids on hormone blockers, a wide open border, the destruction of Western society, race hatred, defunding the police, rising crime, the downfall of Minneapolis' hometown, and him preaching about Donald Trump's personality. It's on you, John Piper, to explain yourself, not us. Go ahead, really quick.
Yeah, you're good. Again, John Piper would obviously stand against those things categorically.
But he's not voting.
Categorically and unequivocally.
But if you don't vote against
John,
it.
And John Piper wouldn't be the only one who would take this sort of stance. I mean, if you're going to oppose John Piper as a notable conservative.
Well, I can listen. Andy Stanley, Russell Moore, John Piper, Rick Warren, Timothy Keller, who's now passed away. If
David Platt, we could continue to
go on. Yeah, but why won't they vote to end abortion? Period. End of story. If you will not vote to end abortion, stop telling me you're a Christian all the time. Start acting and voting like you are a Christian.
I think they're just saying that we can't have unconditional support of an individual because of his party.
We have unconditional support of biblical principles that a flawed vessel fought for and achieved. So Russell Moore, David French, all these guys that go around and talk about how terrible the Christian right is, how can they reconcile? Because they're going to have to go in front of a supreme ruler of the world, Jesus Christ, and says, why were you preaching in the New York Times and writing these long meandering op-eds about how you didn't like Donald Trump's tone when you were given a binary choice, baby saved, babies murdered? And they're like, well, I don't like his tone. What kind of a Christian is that?
He didn't mention tone. He mentioned unrepentant sin of 5 different categories, all of which are mentioned explicitly in the New Testament. Okay. If I was an Israelite in the time of the Old Testament, I would not have advocated for Samson as leader. He was not a commendable leader. I would not sit here and
campaign. Why is he in the Hall of Faith? God thought he was a great leader. Thank goodness you're not the judge of men.
I would not sit here and campaign for Samson to be judge.
God put Samson in Hebrews. You didn't.
So did he put Jephthah too, and Jephthah was a child sacrifice.
Yes, so maybe we can learn from the flawed vessels of the Old Testament, not try to apply the perfect interpretation of the law. You're making my point. So it's not even a choice is what I'm getting at. If you believe in the biblical principles, if you believe in what the Bible says, to love life, to love the unborn, to care about those that can't defend themselves, it's a binary choice. And it's not about defending the unrepentant alleged behavior of an individual. It's did that individual advance the priorities that we care about? And the answer resoundingly was yes.
Yes, and I would agree.
Yes,
with you.
So you should vote Trump.
That's not the end. Do we really think that's the end, though? I mean, I think it's a biblical principle, Charlie, and hopefully you would agree that it's not only policies that a leader advocates for that impact the nation.
You're right. It's also Supreme Court justices.
Yes, and it's the character of an individual.
Okay, well, hold on.
I could go through scripture.
Have you ever met Donald Trump?
To advocate this. No, I have not.
Okay, but hold on. I think this is super important because absent meeting an individual, you don't know who he truly is. But let's say he's all those terrible things. I'm a sinner. Trump's a sinner. Trump has done more to fight for the priorities that I care about. And I believe that every Christian should pray deeply and act to defend the unborn this November. Thank you so much. We'll get to the next question.
Simple,
thank you. We got to get to the next
question.
Question
with it. Do you think Jesus of Nazareth, first century, who you and I both follow, do you think he would agree with your statement that no born-again Christian
I think Jesus of Nazareth would have handled Trump like he did in John 8. He would have said, do not cast a stone against Donald Trump. He would have said, Trump, sin no more. You know what he would have said to Charlie Kirk? He would have said, don't throw a stone at Charlie Kirk. Charlie, sin no more. Because we all fall short of the glory of God. And God uses all of us as broken vessels for his purposes. All of us.
Might as well use
thank you.
Hey, how's it going, Charlie? My name's Dom, and I'm a super conservative, okay? But I have one liberal view, and I want to know how you can advocate for it in a community like this. And that is abortion, which you basically just talked about. Now, I'm a Christian, so I don't want you to talk on the Christian policies. I understand why, as a Christian, I shouldn't be pro-choice. But as someone that, you know, has ran into some issues in a hookup culture, how can you advocate for pro-life?
Wait, so you are pro-abortion?
Yes, I am. It's my only liberal view.
Why are you pro-abortion?
Okay, so I'm sure you've heard this 1,000 times. I just believe that in certain situations where someone is about to give birth, it might be better to have that abortion just because it might impact the child's life in a poor way, and it may also impact the parent's life.
And you did say you were a Christian?
Yeah. So I am a Christian. I understand after what you just said there, I totally understand why I should be pro-life.
So why aren't you?
Just because I haven't done any research on abortion, which no surprise there. My one liberal view is the one I don't know a whole lot about. I just want to know how you can advocate for it in a community like this. Take, for instance, obviously I should be pro-life, and my buddy has.
Yes, you should be pro-life.
Yeah. I should. I'm aware. But I want to know how you can advocate to people that aren't Christian and are stuck up in this hookup culture and believe that it is a use of birth control.
Well, I'll just advocate to you because you're asking me how to win people over. I mean, when does life begin?
I don't know.
Yeah. So, but shouldn't? Yeah. I mean, I know you said you haven't thought very deeply about this, but the scripture says, "I knitted you in the womb. I knew you before you're in the womb." And so, if it's a human life and it started at conception, shouldn't those lives be worthy of protection?
Do you believe there's ever a case where it's a better choice?
What do you mean by better? So are you trying to say that murder might be justifiable because somebody might not have enough money to afford a kid? Is that what you're getting at?
It would be, yeah. The only reason I am advocating
that's eugenics, just so we're clear.
What do you mean eugenics?
Okay, eugenics is the justification for murder for a broader project or purpose, population control, or to get rid of the infirmed or what they would consider to be the racially unclean. Okay. Margaret Sanger people.
The only reason I say it is because I'm unaware if it is clearly if it's actually a life at conception. If it is a life, then obviously you shouldn't be taking that life.
It is a life. Yeah. New DNA is formed. Your entire being, your chromosomal structure, who you are, started right there at conception. What is your name?
Dom.
Dom, your entire being, how tall you are, the color of your hair, your eye color, your organ structure, whether you have food allergies, all of it, your entire human genome at conception was put right there, the sperm and the egg meet. Who you are today started right at that moment. It didn't start at 6 weeks. It didn't start at 15 weeks. The only difference is that you're bigger than you were then. You're no longer in your mother's womb. You're no longer dependent on your mom's, obviously, umbilical cord. And you just happen to no longer be past that. So the size, level of development, environment, a degree of dependency, those things should not change moral questions, right? So since life begins then, we should protect that life. Do you agree?
I would agree. I just haven't done my research, so.
No, I appreciate the humility, but now you don't have any more liberal views, because now you're pro-life.
Now I got nothing to say to the liberals whenever they ask me. Now I just
Now you can go to liberals and say, hey, when does life begin? And you can say, hey, why is it okay to murder a being when it's at 15 weeks, where it has a heartbeat, can feel pain, brain waves, eyes formed, but somehow you're objecting to a baby that's 2 years old and you can't murder that baby? Where do you draw the line? Why at one place do you say it's okay here and not okay here? So welcome to the pro-life movement. God bless you.
Thank you, Charlie.
So, Charlie, I just wanted to come here today and basically say I'm not too political, but I'm a big fan of Kamala Harris. I think she seems like a sweet lady with a nice smile. And basically, I just want to know, what's your beef with Kamala and how can we resolve this?
Yeah, so... I'm impressed because I've never heard anyone say anything positive about Kamala Harris. Why don't you tell me how great she is? What has she done?
Well, I think she seems like a nice lady. Like, she has a nice smile, and I also just feel like she seems like she'd be fun to hang out with.
She seems to me more kind of like the librarian that gets super mad at you because you're making too much noise while you're hanging out with your friends. I mean, there is one good thing that Kamala Harris is good at, but I'm not going to get into that because I'll keep it PG-rated here. But I mean,
we can agree to disagree. I kind of want to get to know her, but we all have our own opinions, right?
Yes, we do.
Hello, Charlie. First, I want to applaud you and thank you for, you know, giving a good speech, you know, good traditional conservative values. I really like what you've been doing with your rhetoric these past couple years, you know, going more traditional conservative and trying to fit in with us rather than boomer talking points. I really love that. And something I really like that you said is that we should not be doing any more foreign aid and we should focus on our own country. And I have one more question. While we condemn Hamas and the Free Palestine crowd, why as conservatives should we continue to financially support Israel financially with our money and all? Like, they have been endlessly bombing the Middle East and been very open about wanting to wipe out Gaza from existence. And many ancient Christian churches have also been destroyed because of the Israel bombing. And now Candace Owens, Alex Jones, and other conservative figures now calling out Israel, and now you even got called an anti-Semite in October because you called out Israel for the intel failure of the government, and then you threatened to stop supporting him at some point. I just want to ask, why should we or should we not continue supporting Israel financially and with our military?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a question I get frequently. So do you want me to repeat it, guys? Did you hear it? You did not hear it. He's asking, should we keep on supporting Israel, and if so, what about all the bad things that Israel has done? First of all, I just want to say Candace Owens is awesome, and she's great, and she's going to continue to go on tour with us, and she's great. So I want to make sure we're morally clear, though, because there has been a rewriting of history. This war was started by Hamas. Hamas went into Israel, and they did not go after military installations. They did not go after troops. They went after women and children in the nursery and brutally slaughtered them. Now, war is terrible. I'm not an apologist for the Israeli military. As you mentioned, I tweeted against the IDF because they did bomb a church in October, and I was called all these different terrible things. However, I am cheering for Israel. So let me tell you more broadly, okay? And let me ask you, are you a Christian? Yes or no? Or I would imagine yes. Okay. Catholic? Yeah, that doesn't surprise me because the question usually comes from Catholics, and that makes sense. Because there's a difference in theology, right? In the Catholic Church, and I have a lot of respect for Catholics, there is a belief in replacement theology that the church replaced Israel. So every time that you hear Israel in the scriptures, you just say it's the Christian church, not actual Israel. I don't hold to that view, but we could agree to disagree. I don't want to get too deep into that. And by the way, some of my closest friends are serious Catholics. My wife was baptized Catholic. Mad respect, okay? But it's a disagreement. But here's my take, and I've said it before, is that I'm very biased because my visits to Israel changed my life. My visits to Israel brought my faith alive where I saw where Christ our Lord walked on water, where I saw where Christ our Lord delivered the Sermon on the Mount, where I saw where Christ our Lord was born, where I saw Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Sarah, Rebecca, and Leah, where they were laid to rest in Hebron, where all of these stories that we are told are mythologies are in your face in Israel, where it makes the Bible become real, where I saw where Christ our Lord was betrayed, where I saw where Christ our Lord rose from the dead after 3 days. So my support for Israel is a little biased and personal, where access to my holy sites changed my life. And I believe it's a moral good for Western society for us to be able to visit our holy sites uninterrupted, to see the miracles that are in the Bible that created the narrative story that led to Christ's resurrection. And so that is why I support Israel. I love going there. I love visiting there. And I hope they win the war and kill every last Hamas terrorist. Thank you. Thank you. We got to get to the next one. Thank you.
Sorry. Hi, Charlie. Thank you so much for coming. So I'm very pro-Israel, but I'm going to ask this question more from like an American standpoint. So obviously, we all know that the left is always capable of stooping to new lows. But I think one that I could have never seen coming was this new support for Islamic terrorism. It's not just like, oh, a small majority here are supporting Islamic terrorism. Like, there are mass amounts of people going to the streets in support of this. And I know, so President Trump has suggested that if he is to win again, hopefully, that visas will be stripped, these people will be sent back. But I guess other than the foreign people, since obviously some of them are citizens from America, like, what do we do about this from an American standpoint? And how do we move our culture forward, knowing that people, like, it's hard to put into words that people support Islamic terrorism here.
Yes. Well, I mean, you shouldn't support any terrorism, right? Whether it's Islamic or general, right? Or, and you know, you shouldn't support, for example, the transgender individual that went and shot up the school, you know, against Christians. Like, you shouldn't support any form of terrorism. But yes, very simple. Coming to this country needs to be a privilege, not a right. If you come to this country on a student visa and you burn the American flag and you say death to Israel, you go back to your country of origin. Like, I'm sorry, go back. You're here as an invited guest, and you have betrayed that promise, right? And it shouldn't be overly generalized. It shouldn't be done by group. But if there's a pattern of behavior that if you're organizing a group, like at Harvard, right, and you have signs and posters that say from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, and you have constant waving of flags saying that, you know, Jewish people are committing genocide and that America's a terrible country and that you're burning the American flag, you're a visitor here, and you should cease to be a visitor. We have a right to determine who gets to come to America, and we need to exercise that right. Finally, I will say this, which is, if left unchecked, you get some very serious ramifications. Look at Ilhan Omar, who is a member of Congress now from Minneapolis, previously from Somalia, who has some very, very nasty things to say about this country. So we need to reaffirm that we should have control over our borders, control over people coming into this country. One of the most important things that we could do, and hopefully President Trump fixes it. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, thank you so much for coming.
Hi, Charlie. It's nice to meet you. My question is, you talked about how we should hire based on merit and not on diversity, which I agree with. However, I feel like there's people who don't have the skills or the resource to acquire the merit that you talked about. So if we're saying no to diversity, how can we help those people as Christians? I feel like it's our duty to help those people acquire the merit that you talked about.
Yeah, that's a great point, a great question. And so what we find actually is that diversity, equity, inclusion creates more prejudice and racism where it otherwise would not exist. So getting rid of it will get rid of this idea that people are only a certain place because of some sort of hiring quota or some sort of other accelerated way forward. Look, you're always going to have inequities. The best answer I have, let's just talk about Black America. The best answer I have is that we need more dads in Black households, period. 75% of Black households do not have a father around. 75%. That right there, you get all the other inequities from there. And don't take my word for it. Look at Barack Obama. Barack Obama said that the amount of lack of fathers in the home, and let me say it differently, 1 in 4 households, Black households in this country, have a stable father around. And the kid is more likely to commit crimes, go to prison, less likely to learn to read as his counterparts. The other part is that we need to crush the public sector teacher unions that have been terrorizing our public schools in this country, that have been lowering standards and not teaching kids adequate skill preparation, the ability to read and write correctly, all these different sorts of things. But here's the last thing I'll say. I can go through all the solutions. You're going to have disparate outcomes in life. That's a sad reality. You have to be okay with that. And sometimes those disparate outcomes have nothing to do with race. Sometimes it has to do with where you're raised. Sometimes it has to do with cultural impact or differences. And unfortunately, we have been led to believe, and Thomas Sowell writes this in Discrimination and Disparities, that you cannot blame racism for every single thing, every difference between Blacks and whites in this country. There are other contributing factors as well. So hire based on merit. And here's what we saw in the 1950s when America was far more racist and we had far, let's just say, crueler Jim Crow laws, is Black Americans were actually outpacing the earning potential of white Americans in Chicago and New York City. Is that the DEI affirmative action regime with the Great Society has actually hurt Black America. It has set them back. It has, as Clarence Thomas said, created the soft bigotry of low expectations. And so the best way to unlock the potential of all Americans is start treating people as individuals, not just members of a certain tribe that deserve preferential treatment based on the melanin content in their skin. Thank you.
You said, which I agree with, but do you... Would you say there's a benefit to diversity hiring?
No.
In the short term or in the long term?
Well, what benefit would there be?
For example, exposing kids from low income areas to education. So I agree with you.
No, because they're not. First of all, they drop out at higher rates because they're largely not qualified to be at those schools. Secondly, for every spot that you put a diversity kid in affirmative action is a spot you take from another qualified white or Asian student.
So the answer is for more education to be available in those types.
Yes, well, which I said at the beginning, you cannot structurally solve this if 1 out of 4 Black households don't have a dad around. It's never going to get solved. Okay. And so that needs to happen within the Black community. And until that happens, until we cease subsidizing single mothers in this country, that cycle will almost never stop. But the solution is not to say we're going to try to fix, you know, inequities that allegedly exist by making it that qualified white and Asian students aren't able to get into Harvard, which has been the status quo for the last 20 or 30 years. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. I talked to you about how horrible nutrition has become for people in our ultra-processed food society. Truth is, it's even worse for our beloved dogs. Seen dog food lately? It's more like dead food. Mr. Briggs is our best friend, and the more adventurous we are, I've realized that food is the most important thing ensuring he's healthy. Naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black has invested everything into bringing our dog's food to life. He created Rough Greens, not dog food. It's a natural supplement to your dog's existing food, full of essential vitamins and minerals and made right here in America. You don't have to change your dog's food. Just adding Rough Greens to their existing diet will be the best decision you ever made to improve their life. Mr. Briggs has more energy, plays longer, and is overall the best version of himself. Dr. Black is so confident that this will change your dog's life, he is providing a free jumpstart trial bag so your dog can try it. You just cover the shipping. Head to roughgreens.com/Kirk. That is RUFFgreens.com/Kirk. Go to roughgreens.com/Kirk to grab yours today. Roughgreens.com/Kirk.
Hello, my name is Josiah. My question for you, Mr. Kirk, sir, is there's this slur that's been used against evangelicals, Catholics, Messianic Jews even, this slur, Christian nationalist. And is this a term that we should embrace, and how would you define it?
Probably not. Well, first, they're trying to call us Nazis, okay? That's what they're saying when they say that, which is hilarious in some ways, because who are the ones that are trying to lock up political opponents and stifle speech and use political power to try to stop opposition? But we need to, instead, I don't love the term because it plays too much into their hands. I think we should just call ourselves constitutionalists. We constitutionalists who love Jesus and love the country and want a restoration of the Declaration and the promise of the Constitution. That's the best way to counter it. That is their new kind of shtick right now, Christian nationalism. I wouldn't call it a slur because I am a Christian and I am a nationalist. But the phrase itself is playing way too much into the narrative that I think they want us to play right now. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you. Again, if you disagree, our line will find you. We'll go for a little while. Yeah.
No, Charlie, I appreciate you coming here. I'm Ryan. I'm a sophomore here at KU from California. So if I give you some prayer over California, that would be appreciated. But got one thing I would like you to make a statement on, another is a question. So the first one is, and I agree, it's total crap, toxic masculinity and this whole age of toxic masculinity. Now, I think it's a load of crap. And what's your opinion on toxic masculinity?
Well, I mean, you mean that toxic masculinity that stormed Normandy Beach and won World War II? Or the toxic masculinity that founded the country? Or the toxic masculinity of primarily men that go and fight our wars, fight our battles? I mean, it's a preposterous statement. Instead, we need to lift up men, no longer say that they need to be boys, but they need to turn into dangerous gentlemen and understand what exactly that means, which is to protect the innocent, know your power, use it prudently, and go on an adventure and stop being a boy in your parents' home.
And really appreciate that. One more. I feel like at KU, maybe it's just me, but there's a silent majority here of conservatives, of conservative Christians. What are a few, you know, maybe practical tips you would give these Christians, you know, step out in faith, step out in boldness to really take this campus back? Because this is God's campus, and how can we take this campus back?
The best witness is your behavior. And so, which is when your friends are getting, you know, super drunk, don't. And they're going to ask questions why, and they're going to see that you don't have the hangover, and you're going to be happier, and you're going to be 15 pounds lighter, and you know, you're not going to have to all of a sudden, like, I'm so depressed. Like, okay, actually, I'm not. Like, actually, I feel great. And I woke up at 7 a.m. and went for a run. Or when all these people are bragging about their body count, be like, yeah, that's really disgusting. You have an STD. You might not know. I don't. Ha-ha. And all of a sudden, they're going to be like, wow, that's, how do you, like, well, yeah, actually, I'm saving myself for marriage. Why aren't you, by the way? Use your behavior needs to be your witness, especially on a college campus. More than being preachy or anything, all of a sudden, they're going to want what you have. Because what you have is you have someone, you are delaying gratification and putting a better life ahead of immediate pleasure. And that's hard to find on a college campus because a college campus is filled with immediate gratification all the time. You know, take this substance, take this drug, hook up with this person, and there comes a cost with that. And that cost is really heavy, and I think it's incumbent on men to try to turn the corner on that and say, no, we want to have a revitalization of piety where we're going to save ourselves for our partner for marriage. And if you haven't done that, then try to recommit yourself to that. And you're not going to try to, you know, participate in this ridiculously damaging and poisoned culture of trying to sleep with every single individual you possibly can. There's nothing masculine or impressive about that, honestly. That just makes you an uncontrolled animal, actually. That you sleep with a lot of women. Like, okay, yeah, that takes nothing. That doesn't impress me at all. You know what impresses me? In this culture, saving yourself for marriage and having a big family. Now I'm impressed, actually. But through your witness, through your behavior, have the witness.
Appreciate it. Thank you for coming out, Lincoln.
Thank you. Oh, happy birthday, man. Thank you. Yes, sir.
How's it going, Mr. Kirk?
Last call for disagreement soon, yes.
So I'm from the Kansas City, Kansas side, right, not the Missouri. So my dad's a cop, and just recently, over the past year, we've been dealing with a lot of fentanyl, all those drugs. I've had close friends overdose. Do you think this is related to the border, and if so, how can we fix that?
Yeah, it's 100% related to the border. I mean, I think like 90% of all the fentanyl comes illegally across the southern border, manufactured in China, given to the cartels, come across the border. The way we fix it is we close the southern border, period. And Joe Biden wants the border open. I don't know the numbers, but I would guess anywhere between 800 and 1,000 people in the state probably overdose from fentanyl every year. Am I about right? Yeah. Probably ballpark. Not every single one of those, but a majority of those deaths are unnecessary. And college, for you college kids out there, be very careful what drugs you take. They might be laced with fentanyl. You might think, oh, I've done this drug before. You have no idea where it came from. First of all, you shouldn't do drugs at all, okay? But Every day I hear of another story of a kid that dies of fentanyl overdose, and he thought he was just taking a party drug, and he dies. And the Chinese Communist Party and the cartels and Joe Biden are to blame. But I put the most blame on Joe Biden, who keeps our border completely wide open, which I believe is an act of treason against this country. Thank you.
Yep, thank you. Hey, Charlie, how's it going? I'm just wondering what you think about how Trump handled the 2020 election loss. And I kind of think that we were a little bit hypocritical because we gave the libs a ton of crap for not really accepting 2016. And I'm just wondering if you think Trump kind of made a mistake with how he responded and just with everything that happened. And
no, the only, first of all, 2020 was, I think it's on the surface, a smart point. But there is no equivalent. There's no equivalence between the normal process of election in 2016 and what happened in 2020. There's just two different galaxies, right? Mass mail-in balloting. 2020 was a lot more shady and also a lot closer. But the question is, do I think Trump made a mistake? No. The only thing I wish that Trump would have done differently is that I wish that, and we all should have realized that the feds were setting us up on January 6th. And that's the only thing that could have been done differently. Besides that, no. And so, you know, we must understand fighting for election integrity is super, super important. The only other thing I wish Donald Trump would have done is on January 5th, I wish he would have went down to Georgia and campaigned harder for the two Senate runoffs. That's something, because we lost those two Senate seats on January 5th in Georgia. But I remain a huge supporter of his, and we have to understand Trump used every legal angle he had as president when he was president, and he failed in the courts, and he did all these different things, and he left office. Despite all the clamoring, he left office, went down to Mar-a-Lago, and he's on a mission to win it back. Thank you.
Hey, Kirk. My question is sort of a question/compliment. You're a very good public speaker. And I think a lot of people here might struggle with that. What I'm curious is somebody with so little education beyond high school and, you know, just experience in the field, how are you able to so confidently just kind of word vomit, right? You've said pretty much every question you've answered has been no answer. You've just kind of said what conservatives want to hear. So really all of your work is not a debate. It's just confirmation bias.
So what did you learn out of
where, sorry?
You want a debate?
No, I'm good. I'm just curious where you learned.
You sure?
Where you learned how to public
speak.
I'm
a high school graduate. You're in college, man. Let's debate. I vomit for a living, you said.
Yeah.
Come on, let's debate.
No, I'm not here to debate. That's not my question.
You're just here to insult me.
Yeah, I am.
You're a hero.
Where did you learn how to public speak? Because you're really good at lying out of your ass.
What have I lied about? Name one thing I lied tonight about. Name a second thing. No, name a stat. I said that's wrong.
You said 11 million jobs. You said 50%.
Yes, 11 million jobs are open for blue-collar work, according to Mike Rowe, and according to three independent studies, according to the Department of Labor. Name another stat I said that's wrong.
I guess my main point
is... No, name
is
a third stat that I said that's wrong.
When you say a stat, or you just say numbers, it's helpful, usually when you're public speaking, to say where you got that information. Because people who disagree with you might not...
Give some examples. Where did I lie or say a stat that's not true?
You need to work on not doing confirmation bias.
Wait, hold on. No, but you come up here and say, oh, how did you, with a high school education, learn to spew BS? Say one thing I said that was wrong, misleading, unfactual, not rooted in data.
You're doing it right now.
I'm asking you a question.
I was just making a comment, and you're spinning it. That's what you're really good at. That's why I think you're a good
public
speaker.
Up here and insulted me. I'm asking you, how have I misled this audience? And you come unprepared, like not with a single data. I thought you'd at least have like one gotcha, man. Like one number, like one thing. Nancy Pelosi's stock portfolio up 65% in 2023. That's true. 11 million job openings, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, that require muscular labor and require just a six-month technical training degree. That is true. At the apex, 15,000 people coming across the southern border every single day. I even said it's down a little bit. That is true. What have I said that's incorrect?
What do next? You're good at what you do, but not for the right reasons. That's all I'm saying.
They don't want to debate me because they can't debate me. They can't say one thing I said that's wrong. They can't name one data point. They just come up here and insult. You, my friend, are why we are going to beat you guys historically, because you are afraid to have a debate. Just, it's so amazing, the smugness. How'd you learn to speak like this in word vomit? Oh, what'd I say that's true? Everything. Name one thing. Name another thing. Name another thing. Yeah, you should ask for money back at KU. They're really scamming you, man. You'd think you'd have one little thing. All right.
Hey, Charlie. I think you're a great public speaker, and you made me go from being a woke liberal to being conservative because you are factual. My question is that I am a proud daughter of Mexican immigrants, but they are actually very conservative and very Christian, and they actually are big fans of you, and they say hi. The reason why they're really conservative is because they don't want the values that and morals that ruin their country ruin this country as well. My question is that I often get called a traitor or stupid for betraying my people just by being a Republican. I've been canceled so many times. How can I help other people of color understand that the Democrats don't love them and don't actually want to help them, and that the Republican Party is for everyone? Also, I'm a really big fan if you haven't been able to tell.
Let's give it up for her. Is she not great? Is that not great? What's your name?
Oh, Juliet.
Julia?
Juliet. Juliet, like Juliet. Romeo and Juliet, yeah.
Sorry, it's hard to hear back sometimes. God bless you. And tell your parents hello. Look, it sounds like your people are America. It sounds like they're the ones that have this racial hostility. What drives me nuts is, you know, I get called racist every day. That doesn't bother me. But they're the ones that say you're a race traitor. And I look at you as someone made in the image of God, with your own thoughts, your own feelings, your own agency, someone that loves this country and wants to contribute, someone that thinks independently, and someone that is full of joy and gratitude. And then I look at the other side, and they're like, why have you left to go to all those racists? It's like, okay, well, look around. You just got a standing ovation at an event that is celebrating that you're coming here. And so this is what's happening in this country, is that the left is filled with bitterness. They want black-only dormitories on campuses across the country. Over 100 university campuses have black-only dormitories. They say that you are not allowed to think a certain way if you have a certain skin color. Our movement is different. I don't think anything of you based on the color of your skin. You know what I look at you as? As an American made in the image of God, that I'm grateful to say that we're in this country together.
God bless you. God bless you.
Thank you.
Hi, Charlie. I'm from Kansas City, Missouri, the better side. And I'm sorry, I had to say it. I don't come to you. I do online college because it's like my only option for actual good education. But anyways, so I was going to ask, you said on your podcast a few episodes ago that you were talking about the military and how to get more men and women into the military. But then you said that we shouldn't be putting women on the front lines. And I kind of agree, I kind of don't agree, just because I have some family members that are in the military. And then I have some female family members that are stronger than a lot of men that I know. And so they are in, they disagree, and I don't really know how to say no, because I want to agree with you, but I also know that we should value women in the military, but I don't know about the front line. So I just want, you didn't really clarify in your podcast, so I was just asking here.
Yeah, no, it's an important point. First of all, it doesn't diminish current heroes that are females in the military that are on the front lines. It's a broad statement that I think is necessary to defend for this particular reason. Number one, let's just go at the first point you said. We need to make it harder for men to get in the military and raise the physical fitness criteria for men to serve in the military, not lower it. That's number one. Number two is that I'm a stickler for traditional American values, and I think that women are deserving of protection, and they should not be on the front lines of the most harsh military combat that could potentially leave them amputated or dead. I know that's like an old traditional view, but I think that it's in the most historic way that I don't think that we should forget or we should betray, is that men are the ones that go to war in the most ferocious frontline fighting. There are other reasons for this, though. And again, there are outliers, which is that men do have more bone density, higher testosterone rates. Men are just better fit for some of the, let's just say, toughness and grittiness at war. Now, I will say, though, some women are better at war than men. I totally acknowledge that. But I do think we can agree that the overly feminization of the American military is becoming a problem. And what I mean by that is feelings-based, tell me your pronouns, right? That is taking over the military and making us less prepared. I'm not saying it's because we have allowed females in frontline active combat roles. In fact, I think that some of our heroes have gone and, you know, fought and done some amazing stuff and won medals of honor. But I do think that it's a trend where we're trying to reconfigure a social experiment. I say, time out. We won two world wars with a male frontline army, with a female supporting back army. Women played a huge role in World War II. Huge role. They're the ones that staffed a lot of the factories and put together the assembly lines. It's just they weren't always told the heroism of Iwo Jima or, you know, on the front lines of D-Day. And so we need all people involved in the U.S. military, in my personal opinion. But what are we trying to fix? When our military was at our greatest, it was the least politically correct, most vicious fighting force on the planet that defeated the Nazis and defeated the Japanese. I think we should try to get back to that.
I just had one more quick thing. I also have a lot of family members in law enforcement, and including the FBI. And you say a lot of things. A lot of conservatives really hate the FBI. But I just wanted to ask if you think that it is truly the FBI or that it's mainly the DOJ. Because I know firsthand that it's the DOJ tells the FBI what to do. Not saying the FBI doesn't say no, which they should a lot of times. But they normally fill out what the DOJ tells them what to do.
Yeah, so I think Christopher Wray's coming here tomorrow. That's what I'm told, right? That's hilarious. Someone told me that Christopher Wray's coming to KU. Is that right?
Yep.
He's coming here tomorrow. Is that right?
Yeah.
Something else. Yeah, so look, there's some great FBI agents. The FBI does some great stuff. I think the FBI needs to focus more on child sex traffickers than on Catholics going to Latin Mass, okay? I think the FBI needs to focus a lot more on people that are coming across our southern border on the terrorist watch list than on social media posts. The FBI just did a house visit of a woman that had a social media post that was critical of Joe Biden the other day. The boots are different than the suits of the FBI, but I will say this. If you are actively, like, raiding a home of a pro-life leader in a no-knock raid and you're saying, I'm just following orders, at some point you should just resign. I know you have a career. I know you've worked hard for it. But I personally would not be able to go knock down the door of a pastor that is being accused of praying outside of a pro-life clinic, and his eight kids are around terrified in fear, and the FBI comes in, guns a-blazing. They don't have to do that. And they say, I'm just following orders. That's how you get Auschwitz. So I hope that some people really start to... We need mass resignations from the FBI soon.
Yeah. Tell Trump to appoint my dad as director.
All right, you got it. Thank you. We'll take a couple more. How does that sound, everybody? We'll go a little overtime, okay?
Hi, my name is Christina. I am from Puerto Rico. And I'm super cold. I'm sorry. I'm not used to this cold.
That's totally understandable, given where you're from. So
it's really warm. You should visit.
Yeah.
But I am a full-on Christian, and most of the things that you've said today, I vouch for that. But concerning my island, concerning Puerto Rico's decision in Trump's legacy or what Trump should do or should not do in benefit for the island, my question is, knowing the heavy impact we already are having here in mainland and in Puerto Rico, like, this is a global thing. It's not just only here. It's a full-on economic stuff going on. Why Trump would be a good presidential impact, and what promised facts would benefit Puerto Rico, like actual facts, not just only throwing paper towels to us when we're in a full-on destructive force. And because most things happen after an effect, I don't want to see paper towels being thrown.
That was a little taken out of context, just so you know.
True, but here are my thoughts.
He was there to help and give disaster relief.
But true. But then Trump repeatedly opposed disaster funding for Puerto Rico while disputing and failing to acknowledge that Maria's death toll was not even acknowledged, Hurricane Maria. Trump also had a fact official saying that he did not want a single dollar being given to Puerto Rico for disaster reliefs. And this was a report stated in 2019. So my question is more based on, well, we Puerto Rico actually have the Jones Act that actually benefits for United States economy. What why would Trump would be a good idea?
Okay, great. So
what does he bring to us?
Number one thing, you trade in U.S. dollars, right? Mm-hmm. You use U.S. dollars in Puerto Rico?
Yes.
Okay, that's the answer. Right now, the dollar's being destroyed by Joe Biden. And I bet inflation is crushing you guys on your island.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
everything.
So let's just, all that stuff, I'll do more research on. I'm not an expert on the Puerto Rico stuff. I have a heart for Puerto Ricans. There's a lot of Puerto Ricans that are here on the mainland because Puerto Rico is part of America. Number one thing is that if you want that U.S. dollar to be strong and not weak, elect Donald Trump as your president, because that dollar has weakened dramatically the last 3.5 years under Joe Biden. And that is through mass inflation. Yes.
But I understand perfectly fine about that. And I in some sorts of ways agree that we are having a full-on impact in economy in the island. But it's not just only 3 years back. It goes like a century back, where we haven't been able to progress. It's not even just Biden or Trump.
No, I know. But I'm happy to talk offline. Well, you would agree there's been a lot of corrupt Puerto Rican officials, too.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So. And I actually vouch for our generation saying, like, hey, why can't we progress on buying a house, getting married,
yes,
having a good on family? And this all starts with the fact that I go to study, but then our studies aren't fruitful.
There
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Fruitful on the fact that I want a return on investment of the time that I invest here.
I understand. So here's what I'll say is that all the other issues aside, right now the country's collapsing under Joe Biden.
Yeah.
Let's stop the collapse and build a strong America, and only Donald Trump can do that, in my personal opinion. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Yeah. And I love Puerto Rico. Great people. I got to get to the next question. Thank you.
I was just going to say thank you.
Okay. God bless you. Thank you. All right. We'll do a couple more.
Hi. My name is Callie. I'm a non-traditional student. I just turned 27. I'll get my bachelor's in accounting in December. Because of the industry I picked and my husband, he's also an air traffic controller, having a work-life balance is going to be very tricky. And we also are trying to we're going to try to have kids after I'm done with school. How would you give advice to somebody who wants to have kids but maybe not be able to do homeschooling?
Yeah, that's a tough one. That's air traffic controller. God bless your husband. We need really good air traffic controllers. There are more near misses in this country than anyone wants to report. I love air traffic.
And you don't need a high school degree to be an air traffic controller.
And they have people's lives in their hands every minute of every day. We should give it up for our air traffic controllers. They do a really great job. I got to get through this somewhat quick, but you can join your own pod school. I encourage you to check out Turning Point Academy, local private school. We have some church partners here that I know would love to talk to you. Just don't send your kids to public school. Just don't send them to government school. That's the most important thing. So God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll do a couple more. We're already over time. We're going to go as quick as we can.
Hi, Charlie. Thank you for being here. In the 2019, just before the presidential elections that year, I started listening to you. You inspired me. I have knocked over 33,000 doors in the past 6 years, canvassing for local elections, local candidates, all throughout Kansas. I want to ask you, what level of responsibility do the local elected officials, school boards, city councils, state reps, and state senators have for the problems in this country? And to a part of that, what can we, the people in this room that don't have a national platform like you do, fight like you do for these issues, for these conservative candidates?
Politics is all local, and the answer is yes. The most important engagement you can get involved is on that local level, is on that precinct level. And run for office. If you don't like something, go run for office and find a solution and go be the solution. Don't just complain about it. And maybe one day you could be the governor of this state or be a U.S. senator. Knocking on 33,000 doors, that's mad respect, man. I wish that more young conservatives would spend time knocking on doors than making TikTok videos. Yeah. If we had more young conservatives knocking on doors, we'd have a much better country and a better political system. God bless you, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you. First off, thank you, Charlie, for coming today. Make this one quick. In the last 40 years, we've had one president with active duty service time. I think this correlates with the timeline of culture change that you speak of in this country being different from the 70s and 80s. Do you think there would be a positive to requiring presidents to serve active duty military time?
No, and because the one that did was an awful president. It was George W. Bush. So, yeah. So, no, I don't think so. And the good one didn't have active duty time. It wasn't a politician. But good question, though. Thank you, Donald Trump. So, thank you. And so, I think Carter also served in the military, too, and he was also terrible. But, all right. In closing, everybody, I love this state. I love Kansas. And Here's my send-off message is, yes, it is a conservative state, but you must fight for your values. And for those of you here on campus, whatever you said, I don't know if I agree with that, but sure. Great. You guys have to fight. There's something special happening in this country. There's a seismic shift. Support your Turning Point USA chapter. Stay involved. Stay engaged. And we're going to save this country. God bless Kansas and God bless you guys. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.